I want to give somewhat of an introduction, and you have a ton of awesome titles, and I want to sling them all together. So how would you like to be introduced?
Well, I'm a retired colonel, Army colonel, 41 years of service, and a combat arms guy as well as a special ops guy. I'm the vice president of student services at Ensign College. I spent 26 years at BYU, Idaho, in various administrative and faculty positions. So I started at Ricks College for a number of years, went through the transition. I spent some time at Idaho State University in between. And all along the way, I wore the uniform. So the school was really good to me.
What did you teach at BYU Idaho?
I taught courses on Pakistan, the Middle East, Central Asia, and world religions.
I was never one of your students.
and part of that comes from my education. I have a PhD in adult education, but I have two master's degrees, but one of my master's degrees is in global strategic studies from the U.S. Army War College. So some of teaching that comes from my academic background, but some of it comes from living in the Middle East and going through some time there. So,
wait, what two masters? One of them was in global what?
Global strategic studies.
See, Scott, this is why I back away, because there's a time we just go, you know.
The other degrees from Idaho State University, the other masters from Idaho State University in curriculum and instruction. And
so this is a little bit of background on Guy and I. It took both of us 12 to 13 years just to complete a bachelor's degree.
You know, okay.
And since then, Guy, think of all the things the Guy has done, and then look what I've done. It's like,
I would rather go back to combat, than try to work through that 13 years of getting a bachelor degree. That was a hard thing for me. It really was a hard thing for lots of reasons, but it just took me forever. So the other degrees came a lot faster and a lot quicker.
That's too funny. All right, I'm gonna try to pull something.
You don't have to, Scott. You don't have to say any of that.
Oh, I still want to.
And we have a tradition. Scott will try and do the introduction, and he'll do it once, and I'll laugh and say nope, and he'll do it again, and we'll say nope.
Usually on the third, right? You can redo it.
Usually on the third pass,
you might get through this hour and go, you know what? We got to redo that.
which is why I have all the time afterwards to be able to do that. Yeah.
All right, we're recording.
With over 50 years and millions of worldwide traveled miles between the two of us, we have tasted defeat and relished in sweet, sweet victory. Looking for inspirational entertainment, motivation, and practical insights to drive your business? Welcome to The Selling Podcast.
On this week's episode of The Selling Podcast, we are joined with a retired Army colonel of 41 years of service with combat arms and special ops training. He also is a vice president of student services at Ensign College. He spent 26 years at BYU, Idaho. He has a PhD in adult education and two masters, one in curriculum and instruction and the other, well, I think it's in global strategic studies. We're going to find out more. We welcome our guest today, Guy Hollingsworth. Guy, welcome to The Selling Podcast.
Scott, Mike, good to be with you. Thanks.
All right.
You're such a slacker, Guy. I mean, just you couldn't find anything to do with your spare time, huh?
And I love it because none of that's on LinkedIn. Trying to go through and find any type of homework, you know, trying to find a title, none of that. And there's so much. It's spectacular. I'm torn. Do I call you Dr. Hollingsworth? Do I call you Colonel? Do I call you, Master? I mean, we go all different ways.
It's kind of like when I go home, it doesn't matter what my rank is or my title. I'm always subordinate to my wife, so it's just Guy. You guys are charged today, so Guy works.
We refer to you as Chris's husband.
There you go. And I'm proud of that. That title worked.
That is awesome. Mike, why don't you explain how we're able to afford such an esteemed guest like Guy on a high level podcast. Talent. Exactly. Well,
Guy and I go back. God, it's hard to imagine. It's over 40 years now, isn't it, Guy?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's scary.
Don't tell anyone.
Yeah. We knew each other when we were both broke in college. And one of the sayings that I took from Guy is suck it up and deal with it. That became kind of my motto. And Guy used that expression with his wife, and I thought it was absolutely hysterical. So I want Guy to kind of explain in the context of persistence and tenacity, to suck it up and deal with it.
Well, yeah, well, and persistence from that, if I would use that with my wife, I mean, it'd be a persistent long road just to try to come out of that.
You know, on a serious note, and at the risk of being a little more personal than I would like to be and what your listeners care to hear, but yeah, I mean, that comes from, you know, high school sports and, you know, trying to excel and things from long, long ago. And sometimes that works and sometimes not so much. My wife is a 3-time transplant recipient. She's received three different transplants and has been on dialysis a number of years, 4 different times. And, you know, that kind of saying works for some folks, depending on what you're studying in. But when it comes to, you know, sometimes based on the situation, that didn't always work. I might have used that early on when my wife was sick, but later on, during some pretty tough health days, I learned quickly that doesn't always work. And so I think you have to pick your words carefully for the situation. And so, yeah, Mike, that, I don't use that much anymore.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, she's kind of adopted. My wife's a sweetheart, just as sweet as can be. But if I use that today, she might say, well, why don't you suck it up and move on out the door?
So I wanted to go back to the 13 years leading up to what you've done since then. I've always known that you're in the military, and we've shared a couple stories back and forth, but you say that was a really challenge. But what got you through it, Guy? Because I know the history in sports, and you're growing up in Idaho. What really drove you to achieve? Because if you go back and look at getting into school and lead up to it?
Well, I don't know that I have any secret sauce on this. I just realized, and it took me a while because I tried some different things. I tried to take the easier road a time or two, and that doesn't always work. There were some other variables, and your listeners can speak to this, no doubt. You know, I had this going on or I had that going on, and this was the reason I couldn't do it. I just wouldn't accept that. And again, some health concerns in my family and some military obligations and a number of things going on. But I remember working a couple of jobs, one at night, stocking shelves, and another one during the day, and trying to get through a few classes and just sort of plodding along. And I just said, you know what, there's got to be a better way. And for me, at least, it's to get this degree done. And I, again, Mike, I don't know that there's any sauce here, but I do think that you have to have a goal in mind and reach out. It's common sense. But for me, I didn't have a fallback plan that seemed to make sense for me that would provide a living for my family. And I think, you know, my wife had some expectations, and they were wonderful expectations, and she was a driver there. She didn't crack the whip, but I didn't want to let her down. This was the way for me to do that. And so you just pick away at it day to day. You know, I have journaled every single day for over 30 years, every day, to include 2 combat tours. And it's just one of those things you say, you know, I'm going to do this, and that's all there is to it. Growing up on a dairy farm, you don't have an option to not milk cows in the morning because it's in front of you, and it has to be done regardless of where you're at and what you're thinking and how tired you are from the night before, having stayed up, whatever, as a young kid. And I guess I built some of that attitude just growing up that way, that look, in the morning, you got to get up and do this, or the dairy flounders, the cows die and different things happen if you don't take care of business. And so I don't know, it sort of came from that. And then from there, as I said, the first degree, it just was hard for me to get done for a lot of reasons. And then I kind of learned what I was doing, figured out how it worked. And the other degrees that Scott mentioned, they came easier because you learn, you find your niche and you find what you're decent at, and away you go. I heard Colin Powell speak a number of years ago at the Command and General Staff College in Leavenworth, Kansas. And he was speaking to a group of senior Army officers. And he said, look, you need to help students find their niche because a whole bunch of them don't know what it is. You got to help them find what they're good at. I wanted a business degree, and I wasn't smart enough to get into the business school. So I got an advertising degree, and I was okay with that. And I think I see too many people. I saw too many in the military that wanted to be a special forces guy, but they just weren't cut out to be that. And eventually I have to look at them and say, let's try something else here because that's not working for you. And there's no reason for you to beat your head against the wall for years and flounder because you may want to, and desire is great, but if you can't, if you're not good at it, let's find you something else to do. And I was pretty good at being a soldier. And evidently, according to my wife, I was pretty good at staying in school forever because I'm rambling, but that's
I do find that absolutely fascinating. And for the listeners who didn't catch the very first part, because more than likely I've edited that portion out, is the bachelor's degree for you was challenging. And looking at your resume with a doctorate and two masters, it doesn't seem like education would be difficult for you. Yet what we were talking about is that took a little over a decade, if I may, to be able to get your bachelor's degree. That's incredible. But when we look at this other part, how do you have that conversation with somebody who wants to be special forces and they just don't cut it? At what point do you say, hey, try harder? Because I faced this in high school basketball where I desperately wanted to be on the basketball team, desperately did. Finally made it freshman year. I didn't play a single game. And then I came back sophomore year thinking, hey, I'm going to be so much better, and really tried, worked on the off season, really tried hard. And I played like two halves because we were blowing out the other team and the coach felt bad. And then I realized, hey, this isn't worth my time. When you make that decision, how do you coach somebody through that of stick with it, persistence, you'll crush it, versus, hey, you suck, get off the basketball team?
Well, I can relate to that, Scott. I desperately wanted to play basketball when I was young. I love the game, still do, football as well. But I just wasn't very big, and I just wasn't very good at it. And so I decided to wrestle. And, it's one of those things that if you can't play basketball, you wrestle.
Which is different because I joined the school musical.
But, I won two state freestyle titles in high school in wrestling. And again, I found part of it is just in your own mind. Like, do you want to ride the bench or do you want to as an eighth grader, my first year in organized football, I played three downs in a whole season. And I said, I'm just probably not going to be a very good running back. And so I became a kicker and set a state record of a 49-yard field goal later on in high school. I mean, I sort of found what I could do. And I think for people that just don't get it, I don't have any special way to tell them other than you give them every opportunity. And then you just simply have to say, let's talk about this. Here's the deal. And when you're a soldier in a combat zone, you don't have time to or the ability to say, well, let's just keep trying. I'm going to say some nice things and let you flounder. I mean, I'll give you one example. I was the director of training for the Iraqi Army 2009, 2010 on assignment from the White House through U.S. Central Command. I was also the senior advisor to the Iraqi chief of staff over training. And then 3 years later, I went to Afghanistan and I was the defense lead for what's called the Afghanistan Threat Finance Cell. And that sounds like an accounting firm I knew. No, but the truth of the matter is, again, on assignment from the White House, I had a team of special operators, and every day for 400 days, we did one of six things when it came to the Taliban and the illicit activity of several terrorist entities. We dealt with bank fraud, money laundering, extortion, kidnapping, human trafficking, and the opium heroin trade. It was high adventure for me, and I looked in the mirror many times and thought, how did a dumb farm boy from Preston, Idaho get into this? But, you know, I had to look at resumes from back home of people who were had a special forces background and whose resumes were a mile long of accolades, people that had done it all in the special operations arena and made most of the time I made good selections there. But a couple of times I didn't. I brought them to Iraq or to Afghanistan, put them on the team, and after a couple of months realized that at least in two cases, I'd done the wrong thing. I'd brought the wrong person. And despite the ugliness of combat, the most difficult thing for me during those 400 days was on two occasions to bring these individuals in, one at a time, I should say, and look at them and say, your resume is impeccable. You've done everything that I need. But frankly, I just can't trust you. I can't put my team in danger and the people who we partner with, the special forces units that we partner with, I can't put them in danger. I can't trust you. Your character, it just isn't where I need it to be. You're a great American. I appreciate your service. Be on the next plane home. And they were. And that was hard because they had made changes in their life for a year. They moved their family, settled them, you know, had gone off to war, great patriots, if you will, but not the right fit. And I didn't have time to look at them, Scott, and go, well, let's keep trying on this one. You just have to look at them straight forward and go, I can't do that. And it's amplified in the combat zone. And I sent them home. It was hard to do. But for me, I don't know any other way of being straightforward. After you give them as much as you can. But eventually, you just have to say, this doesn't work for you. Let me help you.
Guy, I want to go on a side tangent at a later time because I have an idea and I had so many questions. Yes. I do have a quick question on this topic. Many times as managers, we hang on to people we know we should let go way too long. It's usually about a year too long. It sounds in your case that you knew that they were ready to go. Is there a delay in that process or do you make that move as soon as you can?
Well, I don't think you want to have a knee-jerk reaction and regret the move. You've got to give it, I think, at least in my experience, enough time to be sure. Mm-hmm. And when you have that feel, that gut feel, that feel that's 2 inches behind the belt buckle, and it doesn't go away, and you're seeing it on a day-to-day basis, I just don't think you help the person. And although it's difficult to say to someone, you're not really very good at this, let's find you something else. I think the back end of that, Scott, is then what do you do to help them to move on? What are they going to go to? Where can you be a mentor or give some advice or some options that will help them go a different direction? I think it's important not to just send them on their way and never assist down the road. I reached out to these folks later to see what they were doing and mm-hmm. I won't drag into that, but I think you have to have a back end so that it's not just a ruthless be on your way, but I don't think you wait very long. You do need to make sure you feel, at least for me, that this nagging effort or this nagging piece in my gut is just not going away and you're just not doing it. And again, in a combat zone, you just can't afford to hang on. And I think it goes for people that are in sales and just not doing it. You don't do them any service to mm-hmm. just
no. And I think it takes it takes an honest self-evaluation because people know when they're on the bubble. They know when they're going to be fired because they're doing it to themselves and they're not comfortable, right? So I've always heard the analogy: hire slow, fire fast, to preserve your own business. And I think that's true, but I think it starts with an honest evaluation.
And Mike, I think the honest evaluation doesn't just happen at the tail end.
No.
If you can't be honest with an individual and open and let them know what you're thinking all the way along, I think then if you can, then I think it's not a terribly big surprise in some cases. If you save it up for the last minute and then lower the boom, then that's different. But I think part of being a a supervisor, manager, whatever you want to call it, the boss, is to say, look, I'm going to be very honest with you all the way along, and let's do the best we can. And then you have to, you know, chips fall later as they have to. But
I liked your suggestion of this isn't right for you. Let's find something else. If, you know, playing baseball, if I'm left-handed, I'm going to be limited in positions, right? And so when they come to me and say, we want you to be a shortstop, but you're left-handed. I want to be a shortstop. I'm left-handed. The skills don't match the requirements. And I think that's where we need to have the honest evaluation, is I need to understand what I can do really well and where I can do it really well. And don't get on the wrong seat on the bus, to put it in that term.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to hire and let go a lot of folks in higher education to shift to the other hat. And, that's not quite as dramatic as being in combat. Your lives aren't, you're not put in harm's way every day, and lives aren't necessarily at stake, but young lives might be, if you want to draw that analogy in terms of students that you're trying to help. And if someone just isn't the right fit, I think letting them know along the way, and then look, let's see if we can find something different in our organization. And if not, let me use my networking to see if there's another organization outside of ours where you would be a fit. Following up for me with these folks that we move into different spots, I try not to do that, but if I have to, I think following up carries a lot of weight as well. And putting some effort into helping them land somewhere where they can be successful. I mean, that's sort of what I've tried to do in higher ed. And I think generally that they've appreciated that. It's never easy to say, look, this doesn't work. But in the end though, Scott, back to your question, even though that's not easy to do, I don't think you use it as an excuse to just keep dragging things out. That just doesn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And unfortunately, I'm going to do it to you again. We will pause this podcast here. We will pick it up next week. In next week's episode, what you're going to find is a story that I actually get choked up about. Guy continues to share some of his thoughts and insights, some of his stories, and some of the lessons that he's learned. And it is fantastic. Please join us again next week for the Selling Podcast as we continue our interview with Guy Hollingsworth. Also, invite a friend. Share somebody who you think might join in this journey and be inspired just as much as we were with Guy. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.